Today on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, we are going to be talking about all kinds of news and feedback. We've got Kevin Feige came out at CinemaCon, gave a bunch of little news tidbits that kind of give us some clues as to what we're doing over these next couple years in the MCU. So all of that right after this. Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
And I'm Ashley Coffin.
Ashley. How's your day, my friend?
It's great. It's like 80 degrees here. It's beautiful. I've been sitting outside on my deck all day reading Elvira's memoir. I'm just having a day, a really good day.
That sounds like a good day. First time you've read it or?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. I got it a year ago for Christmas, or for Christmas, not this past, but last year. And I was like, I don't know. I'm a summer reader. In the winter, I'll sit there and watch the same YouTube videos over and over again. I just like to be inside, but when I can sit outside, I read.
It's funny. I had an interesting experience this morning. It's sort of podcast related. It was interesting on a couple levels, but I talked about it a few weeks ago. My hip and knee and stuff were messed up. I've had this weird leg problem. Mm-hmm. So I've been going to physical therapy for it, and I can't decide if this was a mistake or a like benefit to me, but I told the guys, they start talking about Marvel movies and they're like, you a Marvel fan? Do you like what they're doing now? And I was like, I do. I am a Marvel fan. I do a podcast about it. So I kind of like stay pretty up on it. And they were like,
always plug.
Yeah. Right. And I was like, yeah, so I like it. And I like to talk about it. And they were like, oh, okay. And so then they started asking me questions. And like a lot of their stuff, it was just weird because people who aren't like big fans of the stuff, you know, they just have seen the movies or whatever. It is so weird talking to them and some of the misconceptions they have and like sort of like, I don't know, like not that I know everything or that like everything I know is correct necessarily, but like some of the stuff they were just like, I don't know, they just had weird misconceptions about what the content, like what was coming where and who's coming into what, and like I don't know, it was a long, anyway, it basically ended up podcasting at these guys because they kept asking me questions and I'd be like, oh well, what I think about that, and then like going along, it was basically like an episode of the podcast. I've already done a episode of the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast today just face down on a table while a guy massaged my leg.
That's so funny.
It was weird. But what was funny about it, though, is they did way more work on me, like way more work. Like they had this
Oh, you kept them going.
Yeah, I kept talking to them. And so they just kept massaging this like spot. But the massage, they're using this like massage gun thing. That's like really, it's like a jackhammer on my leg, you know, and like it's kind of painful. It's good. It's relieving, but it's also really, it hurts. And so they would like talk to me for so long. And I was just like, should I stop talking so they'll stop like doing this thing to, it was like I got extra work done, which was great, but I got like, it also hurt for longer.
Up. Yeah.
I got beat like, my leg for sore.
Great. Ow.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess I have like a way to attenuate how long they work on me now is just talk a little more or less about Marvel.
I do think it's funny because I get that question from my dirty casual friends all the time. Like people who haven't talked to, they're like, oh yeah, you do this podcast thing. What do you think about the state of the MCU? And I'm like, is this a trick question? Like, yeah, maybe you should watch it, you know. No, like, I'm always going to defend it.
Right. But also like, there's a weird thing when you do this so much on a podcast, it's out in the world. People in the community know what me and you think about what's going on in the Marvel scene. So like, when my friends ask me, I'm like, I think so much. Like, there's so many hours recorded. Like, do I need to do this now? Like, it's funny that I feel kind of, like, burdened by the fact that I have to start from scratch to explain my positions on all these different movies, you know?
Your glorious purpose.
Yeah. I misheard you at first, and I thought you said your blurriest purpose, which is a funny thing to... I don't know. That's funny. Your blurriest purpose. Anyway, so... let's get into today's news. We got a lot of stuff coming at us from CinemaCon this week. Kevin Feige got up and gave a, it seemed pretty short little thing, but they let a lot fly. They even showed some clips. They showed apparently a 9-minute clip from Deadpool.
I was very jealous when it cut off.
Yeah. When they do, like, you can find the actual speech on YouTube or Facebook, but then when it gets to the videos, they just clip those out, and it's very frustrating.
Very frustrating. I don't really want to see it. I don't, but right, if they were right. going to play it right then and there, since you said it was a 9-minute spoiler-free thing, I would have been okay with that.
I don't want to see it in that way. I don't want to see my first clips. Like, in a theater, that seems amazing with other fans. I don't really want to see my first clips of Deadpool, like, in the recording of a phone. You know what I mean? Like,
right, exactly.
Yeah, I'm glad they cut it out, but they did give some details, which I don't know how we should handle that, because it's like, I think most of the details are pretty benign. Like, I don't think they're very spoilery. But
true.
Yeah. Anyway, this is some of the stuff he gave us. First off, this is one of the first things he said, and I found it mildly offensive. But I think he didn't mean it this way, but it sounds mildly offensive. He said, he's talking about making movies for theaters, and he says, "That's what we do at Marvel Studios. We make movies for movie theaters. That's all we've ever done, and that's what we will keep doing." And I was like,
"Oh,
that's not all you've ever done. You've made like 3 years worth of Disney Plus shows at this point."
Yeah, oops.
Like, I think what he means is we don't make movies for any other purpose. Our movies are going to theaters. We're not making straight to Disney Plus or whatever, but like,
they're trying to keep the theater thing alive.
Yeah, they're talking about, I mean, and this was at CinemaCon. The whole purpose was to talk about movies and celebrate movies. So I think he's specifically talking about movies, but it's still like that's not all Marvel Studios has done. That felt a little weird. And then I'm sure a lot of our listeners have already seen this popping around on the Facebook feed or whatnot. Popping around. But Deadpool, the character, according to Kevin Feige, will be designing the popcorn bucket for Deadpool and Wolverine.
I was pretty happy with the picture that I saw. Just him, his face in the popcorn bucket with the Dune
Shai Halut teeth. With the Dune Hellmouth thing.
Yeah, I'll do that. Like, a fun for the ladies.
Oh, someone over on the Facebook chat today had a different idea, and I found it very funny. Natalie Harris, I'll just call her out. She said, "So the Deadpool popcorn bucket has no possible way to be anything other than exactly what you'd expect when reaching into a Deadpool popcorn bucket, right?"
Right. Yeah.
Which, like, I think is alluding to Deadpool doing something inside the popcorn bucket or having you reach into
a butthole. I thought, so when they announced the Garfield one, that's why I was like, how could you not have it be the cat's ass? That's so funny.
Oh,
but it's
not.
But yeah, I don't know. We'll see what he does. Let's see how creative he can get. Ryan Reynolds does have the mind of a 7-year-old, so we'll see.
I really like what Natalie is alluding to, which is, like, I think having a certain part of the male anatomy in the bucket.
Oh, like getting lucky at the theater. I got you.
Yeah, I think that's what she's referring to. But I can't imagine Disney doing that. Like, I know they're going to go, I think they'll go somewhere with this bucket, but I don't think they'll go that far. But I think it's the funniest one I've heard so far.
I like it.
It would be, that would be very controversial.
As a kid, you can't buy one of those as a kid,
no,
right?
No, you can't. But you also can't go see the movie as a kid either. Like, you get to be 17 to get into rated R movie. Is that right?
I think so. 17.
Yeah.
So unless you're with a parent.
So I'm assuming the bucket would be the same limit as if your parents want to buy you that bucket, I guess.
That's funny. I guess
that would be fun. Yeah, it's really funny. It would be really funny if they have to set an age limit on the bucket. Like, that's
yeah.
You know, Deadpool did it right if you have to set an age limit on the bucket.
You get through the popcorn and it's like this burnt Freddy Krueger looking, you know what? And you're just God.
Just his face. Just a really good photorealistic looking. Like, you could feel it. Like, it could be like a gummy texture, you know? Like,
oh, yeah. Gross.
Yeah, that could be gross. I like that. Okay. Also, he mentioned that Kevin Feige at CinemaCon mentioned that Fantastic Four and Thunderbolts will be in IMAX.
They better be.
Yeah. So they're making those specifically for IMAX. That's good. I guess that means doing them with the IMAX cameras and everything. Okay, real quick, before we move on and say all the other wonderful things that Kevin Feige said in his talk at CinemaCon, we want to tell you guys about Miracle Made bed sheets.
Yes.
So good.
So comfortable.
Yeah. And self-cooling rad bed sheets. They have the self-cooling properties. They use silver-infused fabrics. It's inspired by NASA people. The space people created, NASA didn't create them, but inspired by the designs of NASA, they infuse silver, which makes them cooler, but they still seal you in, but they don't feel as hot. And they're self-cleaning, as Jeff likes to say. The silver like eviscerates. There's like a battle between bacteria and your sheets, and the bacteria is defeated by the silver. It's like the heroes, the Avengers of the bed sheets. You don't want to miss out on the Avengers of the bed sheets. It kills 99.7% of bacterial growth, and they still feel just like comfortable, comfortable bed sheets. They feel luxurious, wonderful, wonderful quality bed sheets. So stop sleeping on, you know, bacteria and grossness. It helps your skin. Yuck. It helps your pores. It helps with breakouts. It's really good stuff.
Yeah, I'm an absolute sweat monster, so this has been a game changer for me.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's good stuff. So go to trymiracle.com/MCU to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save 40%. And if you use the promo code MCU at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you aren't 100% satisfied, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/MCU and use the code MCU to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/MCU to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Treat yourself.
Treat yourself with some Miracle Made. Continuing on with this wonderful presentation we got from Kevin Feige with all these wonderful little tidbits. This is a weird one, and I feel like this has a lot of speculation potential. They changed the title to Thunderbolts slightly.
Mm-hmm.
They added an asterisk to the end of Thunderbolts.
What does it mean?
Well, my immediate go-to was that's not actually their name in the movie.
Right.
Like when you see in a movie, like you'll see like, or in a book, you have an asterisk, it's referring to something else. You know what I mean? So that made me think, he says, Thunderbolts has an asterisk, like that is the title. It's not a typo. It has an asterisk at the end. And then he said, and we'll discuss that more after the movie comes out. So it has to be a spoiler of some sort. And I love the fact that there's a spoiler big enough in the movie that they want to reference it in the title, but won't tell us what it means. You know what I mean? Like they won't give it to us.
It is funny because when I worked at the Renaissance Fair, we would put asterisks next to our shows that were adult. So I wonder if that might have something to do with it too. So any of the shows that had an asterisk next to it meant that they were adult, you know, content shows.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know if that's a widespread
It's probably not.
Thing or if that was that one. I mean, like just the thing is you can put an asterisk next to anything and it can like you can put at the bottom like an asterisk means this. So an asterisk
right.
Like who knows, the next 5 movies could have an asterisk next to them and they could be like collected as like the ones with asterisks are this or so, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Look at the bottom of the page for what the asterisk means.
Yeah. Don't eat. Consumption of raw fish could make you sick.
I could see it meaning which universe it exists in.
True.
Like what if the Thunderbolts exists in a universe where the Avengers never existed and it's just a Thunderbolts universe, you know, instead. That'd be a little weird because it's obviously it's characters we know. But
yeah.
You could see like a version of this universe where this ended up happening or whatever.
Interesting.
We've talked about like how they could, I mean, we've talked about all kinds of things they could do with the multiverse, but one of the things we've talked about in the past is they could do a different universe that ended like where you don't know it's a different universe till the end of the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What if they killed all these characters, which has been one of the discussions. It's like a suicide mission or whatever. Like, what if they killed all these characters? You think it's over? And then, you know, Doctor Strange pops in from another universe and it's like, wow, this one got dark. You know what I mean? Like, and then yeah. it's like some sort of universe that's falling apart kind of thing. I don't know.
I'll take it. I like the darkness.
Yeah. Well, then darkness, speaking of darkness, one other theory that I immediately thought of was the Asterix. So they're called the Thunderbolts, right? So this kind of goes with part of the Captain America 4 clip that they showed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really sensitive to spoilers, skip forward a couple minutes. Like, I don't think it's a huge spoiler, but it is interesting, especially in connecting these two movies. Because these two movies are set to come out like 3 months apart. Right. And as far as I know, they have moved them around, but they've been keeping them in the original order, which is like Cap 4, then Thunderbolts. So right now, Cap 4 is scheduled for February 14th, 2025. And Thunderbolts is scheduled for... Wait, did I just say Cap? I don't know what I just said.
Cap 4. That's right.
Brave New World is scheduled for February 14th, 2025. And Thunderbolts is scheduled for May 2nd, 2025. So that's only less than 3 months apart. It's like February to May. So really close together. We haven't had stuff like that happen in a while. Like that close together and that seemingly connected, you know?
It's funny that May 2nd took the Fantastic Four slot.
Yeah, interesting.
Because I was looking up at our little calendar up there, and when you said May 2nd, I was like, oh, wow, they really are shifting stuff around.
Oh, yeah, they moved everything around. We have a thing at our top of our like show doc that has like the dates, and we have not updated it since all the most recent changes. but the thing that interests me is like that in the clip, so here's the little bit of a spoiler from the clip. In the clip for Captain America 4, it's Thunderbolt Ross, played by Harrison Ford, as the president, asking Sam Wilson to help him rebuild the Avengers. So, I don't know what happens in that movie, but if he's trying to rebuild the Avengers, and then let's say Sam Wilson doesn't want to help him, and they end up at odds, and then he goes on and does it anyway... Is that what the Thunderbolts are? Like, he wants to build a team of superheroes. It doesn't work out with Captain America 4. And does he build them himself? Is that why it's called the Thunderbolts? And that makes me wonder if in the movie, they're the Avengers. Like, or Dark Avengers. Yeah. Like, maybe they're doing the replacement for Norman Osborn with Thunderbolt Ross. And they're doing the Dark Avengers storyline. But we aren't supposed to know that till after Cap 4. So it's probably. Maybe that asterisk... is either something we won't know till Thunderbolts, or they're called the Avengers in the movie, and that's like sort of like the Avengers, but really the Thunderbolts. Like, it's really Thunderbolt Ross's Avengers, not the real Avengers, you know?
Yeah, because I could see him laying out, like, this is what I want the team to do, and blah, 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 and it just being everything against what our Cap would have done, which is why Sam Wilson's like, no, this isn't, you know, this is a team with a thumb on it. You know, you say jump and we're supposed to just say how high. I could see Sam not doing that. But the other ones, I could see them being like, yeah, sure, we'll be on your little team. And everybody has their own agenda.
Right. A lot. The one that confuses me, though, is Bucky. And like, if Sam Wilson is so strong against it and then Bucky ends up on it. I mean, obviously, we've seen heroes disagree in the past.
Bucky's going to be the den mom or whatever, keeping everybody in line. They brought Bucky in to keep everybody, you know.
Yeah. Like maybe that's the thing is maybe they're like, you know, we couldn't get Sam Wilson to do this. What if you're the leader of the team? You're really Captain America's successor. Like, you were his sidekick for all those years. Maybe you could see Bucky going like, could I really be like Cap's successor? Could I lead the team? And then of course, it's such a wild team that it's not going to be possible to lead that team well. Yeah. So it seems exciting. I don't know. It all seems very exciting. And the fact that they're so close together means it just seems like real connection in the theaters.
It's been so long.
It's been a while.
It's like they had the chance to give us a little connectivity in the Marvels, but they just didn't do it with even just showing us, you know, I've said it a bunch of times, showing us Fury's wife or something like that, letting us know, was that before, after, anything. Right. But they were like, nah.
I think they very deliberately did that because it wasn't successful, which I think is a mistake.
Totally.
Even if it wasn't successful, people don't like Secret Invasion. Your audience the diehard fans still watch Secret Invasion. So it doesn't make the it doesn't make the show better or the movie better by not referencing the previous work. It just makes the whole thing seem like you're trying to brush it under the rug, you know?
Yeah, I don't like it. Speaking of, do you think that we'll have Olivia Colman show up in Thunderbolts with Emilia Clarke's character?
That's a great question. Yeah, that's a great
question.
That'd
be great.
That would be
great. She'd be hard to beat.
Yes. Yes, she would. She is definitely OP now. So I just imagine like her and Captain Marvel and how powerful they are. Like just be really, really hard to beat, or that's set them on opposite teams, I guess.
That's fun.
He also said of Captain America 4, Kevin Feige said, Harrison Ford as you've never seen him before. Which there's also a line apparently in the very end of the shot, and it's of the clip they showed, the little trailer for Captain America 4, and it's Harrison Ford saying, "You're not Steve Rogers," and Sam Wilson saying, "I'm not." Like, just very much like, I'm not the same guy. I'm going to make my own decisions. And I like it. They're trying to differentiate the caps. There was one other thing I read about the clip, and I can't decide whether it's too spoilery, because it does seem like a really cool moment. I don't know if I want to spoil
it. Well, do a 3-2-1.
Okay.
Or do you want to tell me first, and then we can decide?
Well, people can jump forward, I guess. Like, I don't know. This one does seem like it'd be a cool surprise in theaters, so I do feel a little weird talking about it, because I kind of wish I didn't know it. So it's like one of those.
It's the fact that Harrison Ford doesn't have a mustache, right? That really upset me.
Oh, he doesn't?
No, I didn't see one.
Oh, right, in the pictures. I was thought you were talking about the clip, and I was like, I haven't seen the clip. Okay. 3-2-1, and we're going to talk about this very short. So you can literally hit the skip 30 seconds button. We won't be talking about it anymore. 3-2-1. In the White House, when they're having this discussion, Isaiah Bradley is there, and a music cue goes off and causes him to go all whatever Manchurian candidate sort of thing and like attack the president, which Yikes. Is interesting on a bunch of levels. I think it's really cool that Isaiah Bradley is there. I think it's cool that Sam is trying to bring him in. It really ties it tightly to Falcon and Winter Soldier, but the fact that he's that would be such a cool moment.
Got a hydro plant? Like what happened?
Right, exactly. So okay, we'll leave it there. Right, we don't want to spoil over. People who don't want to be spoiled. Spoilers over. And he said this is going to be a relatively grounded action thriller, and he referenced Winter Soldier. He kind of talked about how Sam Wilson was introduced in Winter Soldier, and this is a movie that very much like is continuing the vibe of Winter Soldier, which I mean. That's great if they pull it off. I hope they can pull it off.
I wish they got the Russos to direct it. No offense to whoever the new director is, but yeah, you know, when you're good at something.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. And that's the thing. The Russos, now that they have... it's so weird when you have directors that are so key to a property like they are.
Yeah. Like,
they're almost... Like, if they came back, it would be almost as big as, like, Chris Evans or Robert Downey Jr. coming back, you know, like them coming back. Yeah. Like whatever they chose to direct would be like, this is the successor to Endgame, you know, and Winter Soldier, of course. Yeah. I don't know much about the director, Julius Ona. I've seen one of his movies, which was a weird one. Cloverfield Paradox. He apparently directed. Did you see that one?
Not the newest one. No.
I think it was like the second or third. Yeah, I don't know. It was the one that went straight to streaming. The one
with Nemo? Zemo?
Oh, was he in that?
I think so.
Oh, I'd forgotten that he was in that. Interesting. Anyway, I remember that movie being directed very competently. I just don't know. Just don't remember it that well.
Yeah.
It was weird because everyone was trying to figure out what Cloverfield was about.
Like, yeah.
The whole Cloverfield thing, the whole project of those movies were kind of weird.
Yeah.
Oh, this thing about Harrison Ford as you've never seen him before. I feel like that's got to be a nod to him being a villain, right?
I think so. I can think of a couple other movies, like What Lies Beneath. He's pretty ruthless in that.
Okay.
But yeah, maybe not. Other than that, I'd really have to think about it.
I mean, maybe it just means he's going to be big and red.
That's what I'm hoping for. I want to see him as a Hulk.
Yeah. Well, and also, I don't remember a Harrison Ford movie where he's done motion capture like that. I mean, like, maybe some of the indie stuff where they're de-aging him. He probably did some motion capture. But like being the Hulk. It's just not something we've seen him do anything like that. So it's either a reference to either of those things, which either way, he's probably going to be a the villain of the story.
Yeah.
Or one of the villains of the story. Then we got to more of the Deadpool stuff. Deadpool and Wolverine. This is, I'm going to bleep this, but it's not my fault. Kevin Feige said it on stage. He said it's f***ing awesome.
He said it three times.
He said the F word three times. And then him and Sean Levy joked, the director of Deadpool and Wolverine, joked that Ryan Reynolds had corrupted them all.
Yeah. I'm like, is he on my pod? Like our show? He sounds like me.
Yeah. 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 He's corrupted you like, too. Ugh. It all, Ryan Reynolds is the source of all profanity.
They seem excited about it. They're making me excited. So let's go.
Yeah. 100%. They also talked about, they did show a 9-minute clip, not a lot new learned. It just sounds like it, and they said it was a clip specifically for CinemaCon. So I don't even know how much of this will be in the movie. They apparently, there were a bunch of like just making fun of movie stuff in the clip. So it seems like maybe they like threw a couple jokes in that aren't actually in the movie. They were just kind of picking on movies in general. But it did show Deadpool as a car salesman, So we've talked about that possibly being where he starts the movie, and it sounds like that's correct. And yeah, that's basically what we learned. They said it was completely spoiler free, and that's been shown in the trailers and stuff. So
nice.
This it was not at CinemaCon, but this was Sean Levy talking to Screen Rant, and I just thought this was interesting. It's alluded to in the title, but I thought it was cool to hear him say it. Sean Levy, again, the director, said, it's the third Deadpool movie, but it's not Deadpool 3. It's a different thing, and that's very much Deadpool and Wolverine. And it's not a copycat anything from the first two movies. They were awesome, but this is a two-hander character adventure.
That's good.
I agree.
Yeah.
It just seems like the right thing to do, especially like bringing Logan into this. Like, Deadpool movie seems like a big swing, and I want Logan to be just as important as Deadpool, you know?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Especially, it's like, they haven't worked together, him and Kevin Feige. He said it in, what, 23 years? Or however long ago the first X-Men movie came out. What, 2000?
Wow.
Because Kevin Feige was working on that as just a...
Yeah, like a... like
as a whatever, coffee like, boy, I don't know. Maybe he was the boom mic, I don't know. He did something. But now to come back and get to be involved with this character all that time, it's just really cool.
Yeah. I mean, this is like literally the... talking to my physical therapist today, this is the one they were like, well, that just seems like it's going to be awesome. You know, they were very excited. Mm-hmm. It's just like, that's my new metric for like what the regular audiences are thinking about these movies. One of my physical therapists brought up that he heard a rumor that Goku from Dragon Ball Z was going to be in Marvel soon. And I was like, no, I don't think so.
That's weird.
Yeah, I was
maybe
like
a video game or something.
Right. But... Maybe in a video game. Yeah, exactly. I was like, no, I don't think he's coming to the MCU anytime soon. I was like, they might do crossovers with other universes one day, but like they're not close to that. Like, I think
we have some time.
Yeah, we got some time. We got some time that, like, if the MCU really ever gets desperate and, like, if they've run their course, I could totally see them doing a DC Marvel crossover.
Oh my God, I would love that so much. Yeah. DC versus MCU would be great.
Yeah. Well, and you got James Gunn creating the DCU. So,
yeah.
It'd be awesome. But I don't think Goku is just going to pop in to the multiverse.
That'd be odd.
It would be very odd. So I was like, no. And he kind of kept on asking. I was like, no, I don't think that's a real thing. He's like, it said 2026, and I was like, I just don't think it's real, man. I don't think it's real at all. There's just no...
Yeah, that's not a thing. Yeah, I was like, you need to check your sources, sir.
Yeah.
Wherever you're looking, because a lot of fake news is out there.
Yeah, that's just a meme, I think, that you saw somewhere. Okay, well, that is the CinemaCon news. Any thoughts overall about what Mr. Kevin Feige's saying?
I'm just ready to get back to, like, the big pictures. I love everything going on in Disney Plus. It's great, but I feel like I love the movies, and mm-hmm. I'm ready to get back to like the movies being connected and going on to the next thing. And we have a lot to look forward to now that it seems like we have a direction. Because I just felt like for a long time we had no idea what was going to happen. Are we doing Kang? Are we doing that? Are we going forward with that?
Right.
All the movies are getting pushed. We have no idea what's going on. This seems like maybe it's the last set of pushbacks for everything, and like everything's in its place, and now we can finally move forward. So yeah, I'm ready for that.
I'm really curious to see what they eventually announce. I mean, we're only a few years away, but if they announce Kang Dynasty, like, what are they changing it to, if they are? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that will really give us a sense. But, like, honestly, like, it feels like because of a few years ago, they had to announce a bunch of stuff really early with Disney Plus coming out and COVID, and they were like, hey, don't forget about the MCU. We've got all these projects. And they promoted a bunch of stuff they weren't ready to promote. That's already been, like, said. Kevin Feige was kind of pressured into promoting and announcing shows that weren't really in the stage they normally are when they announce them.
Right.
I feel like we're sort of in this weird catch-up time, and like now that they're spacing out the movies, we're getting one movie this year, two or three next year. And it feels like those are a little more solid. They're on solid footing, and I'm curious to see when they eventually announce what is Avengers 5. Or, you know, if Dark Avengers is Avengers 5, you know, the one that we're that it has an asterisk next to it, and it's actually Thunderbolts. Like, I don't know.
Very interesting.
One more piece of news. I had it on the wrong page. Simu Liu, just responding to someone on Twitter, they said, it seems like the Marvel Studios has, like, abandoned Shang-Chi. Like, I can't believe it's been so long. The same frustration we've all had. And he just responded, I promise it's happening.
Yeah. I feel like that with everything else got pushed back. It needs to fit in. And then we need an Avengers movie for everybody to show up.
Well, it's like that. They just need to make a Shang-Chi movie. Like, you just tell them where it's happening. Maybe it happens after a big event. Maybe it happens before. But like, we are like 4 or 5 years now and don't have one announced. Like, it's crazy. It is crazy to me that we don't have
What happened to the TV show?
Yeah.
Did that get canceled?
I think that was one of those things that they announced that they weren't ready to announce, you know? And so we still, like, maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't. I don't know. But I would like to know. I just don't like the whole announcing things that aren't actually real or like aren't happening, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, lots of cool things in the MCU. I really do feel, like you said, the focus seems like it's back. We're getting connection between these movies. I mean, even like Deadpool and Wolverine is going to connect really strongly to Loki. Like, what is that about, you know? Like, that seems amazing. So, that's strong connection. And then what seems to be like strong connection between Cap 4 and Thunderbolts. So, connectivity rising, baby. Before we move into our feedback portion of the episode, where we've got lots of people talking about some of the news and some of the X-Men 97 of it all, the episode 5, let's talk about my new favorite way to feel better after a night of drinking. That's ZBiotics.
Yes.
They're the maker of the world's first genetically engineered probiotic.
It's great. I mean, it actually really works. And this is coming from a pretty heavy drinker. To be honest, it's great.
we have lives that lend themselves to certain nights of indulgence. And me being a musician, I'm often out at gigs where people are serving me booze, and you know, and you do a show where you drink on the show to try to legends and libations.
Oh yeah,
it's just if you've got nights where you're out drinking or you're in drinking and you're doing your thing, you just all you got to do is have a ZBiotic as your first drink of the night. It's like a little potion that provides you a little protection from feeling like a zombie the next day. Yeah. You take it, you drink responsibly, and then you just enjoy a better tomorrow.
Yeah, ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic, right? Is that what it is? It's good for your stomach. Is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic.
Yes, it is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic.
Listen, I'm not a PhD scientist, but this was invented by those, so yeah. I like to listen to science.
yeah, trust the science. Have a ZBiotics today. They're really great stuff. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted to a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this product down. Just remember, make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly and you'll feel better tomorrow.
Vacations, weddings, birthdays, and reunions. Oh my, there's so much going on. Get the most out of your spring plans by stocking up on pre-alcohol now.
Go to ZBiotics.com/MCU to get 15% off your first order when you use MCU at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/MCU and use the code MCU at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
Definitely the good times.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, up next, we've got a bunch of feedback, some about our recent episodes and some about X-Men 97. So let's see. I had a couple people write in about you guys' score episode that you did. I really fun. That was a lot of fun. Timothy Castillo, one of our patrons, says, I've only listened to about 20 minutes of the scores episode, and I heard Haley's hot take on Captain America, the First Avenger, and both Ash and Jeff just being aghast at her score for it. But I think maybe most of the movie's scores deserve that take. I would say, for me, 23. I guess that's his age. That's all right.
23 to 5, I don't understand.
Some people write feedback in a way that is easier to read than it is to hear. And so, like, I'm trying, we have to kind of adapt them. So this is one.
I guess he means out of the 23 scores, only 5 of them?
Maybe, but he goes 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 in ascending order. So okay. I think he's saying, like, these are my 5 takes.
While only giving us 4.
Yeah, I think he's saying of the 23.
Okay.
5. His number 5 is most of them somewhat interchangeably. I can't remember a bar of music from them for that reason. Like all of the scores, like the other 23 movies or whatever, are all number 5 for him. And then he says, number 4, Spider-Man Homecoming, because the opening is the classic theme into the new, and it is delightful.
Okay, that. Oh, I have problems with that because that is not the score. That is the TV theme show song that they threw in there to get everybody all excited. That's right. Why that was my bottom one.
All right. Yeah, I hear that. Like, score is different from the... There's different uses of music.
That opens with the TV show, the old animated TV show, Spider-Man, which isn't the theme.
Right, right, right.
So I was like, that isn't fair.
3, Winter Soldier, my favorite MCU movie. Everything about the movie completely reinvigorated my love for the MCU when it came out, including the score. Number 2, Endgame, Portals. This is a short description for why. And number 1, Avengers. Assemble the theme of the MCU, or at least of the Infinity Saga. Okay, now I'm going to finish listening to more in-depth and much more thoughtful breakdown.
That's why it's funny when people are like, I only listened to 20 minutes. And it's like, we all came at each other a little bit for each other's choices. Like, we were jokingly aghast by people's choices throughout the whole thing, which is part of the fun. But yeah, I mean, there's something to say for people who listen and remember the score as a thing, and then some people just don't, and I get it.
It kind of sounds like that's the case for Tim, and I'm that way too. That's why y'all joked on the episode that I'm the musician and you guys aren't, and you guys have more like, or you guys aren't like credible or something. Like, y'all made a joke about that. And
yeah.
Like, no. Like, you guys have way more love for scores than I do. Like, way more. I like, obviously I love a score. Like, I think it's a very important part of a movie, but like, I don't notice them. Kind of like Tim was saying, like, I don't notice them. And if you listen to Tim's breakdown of his 5, most of them have nothing to do with the score. It's like, he's like, Winter Soldier, because that movie's awesome. And it's like, okay, yeah, like, that's true. The movie is awesome. One and the song. Score does function really well for that movie. But like, I'm much more like Tim in that way. Like, I don't notice the scores. Like, I don't go listen to them afterwards. I'm a musician, but I'm a songwriter type of musician. Like, I don't listen to instrumental music, like, hardly at all. I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before. I know I have years ago, but I don't know if we talked about that on last episode. That's what I'm getting at. I mean, we may have already had this conversation. If that's the case, sorry.
I don't think we've been on since we've done this, because we had the break with the eclipse and stuff, and you were away.
Right, but X-Men 97, we did last week. And I couldn't remember if we mentioned it. I didn't think so, but no. I think we may have talked about it off mic, and then that's why. or off podcast. And that's why I'm like, did we already have this conversation? But yeah, no, you guys did a great job. And I am so, I just don't care about scores. Like, I do care about how they function in a movie, but I don't even pay any attention to them other than that.
Right.
Like, sounds like Tim's a little like me, like, with that. There's a lot of discussion about modern movies in general, not just the MCU, but modern movies in general, and how they tend to not have memorable scores. But I think that that has more to do with the way that movies are promoted. Like, back in the day, when you had a score to a movie, it was like the biggest thing in the world. You'd hear the Superman score everywhere. You'd hear the Batman score kind of everywhere. Like, it was just, I don't feel like I hear. I guess I do. That's, with, like, the Avengers.
Because I'm going to bring up, like, Hans Zimmer for a lot of stuff. Most of Chris Nolan's movies, you notice the score. Oppenheimer, I remember the score. Even Joker, I remember watching that movie and being like, oh my God, this score is so great. And the composer that she went on to win that year, the Oscar. I don't know. It's just, I feel like you have to want to pay attention to it. And I said it on the music cast. I was listening to Trent Reznor because now he's gone over to getting Oscars and Grammys for doing Watchmen and all these different things and all these different scores, The Social Network and stuff like that. And listening to him being like, you know, you can put three different songs over one scene and, like a god, you can control how you want people to feel. And you don't even, as the audience member, you don't even realize that they're controlling you to feel what they want you to feel because it's with the music. And even if you're not in tune to it or clicked in, you're still doing puppet, puppet, puppet what they
100%,
want.
100%. Like, and that's how, for me, music functions, as that, like, it undergirds the scene and, like, it tells me the emotion they are trying to elicit. And often I think of the music as just part of the vibe of what's going on. Like, right. I very rarely listen and go like, oh, that was a neat little thing they did. It's like, it's just, it's part, for me, it's all, and it is, it's amazing that good movies ever happen, because, like, like you said, they can, the person doing the music, doing the score, can puppet master you, and they could completely change the vibe of what's going on. But so can the actor, and so can the cinematographer, and so can, like, all of these elements. A director really has to work hard to keep the vision intact, because any element falling out of place can make a scene not work the way it's intended to, for the vision of the director. And that's like, it's really interesting.
But it's like when they use the music to tell a story, because if you watch Oppenheimer, and I watched a thing with Ludwig Göransson, and he was explaining how Oppenheimer's theme is this very delicate violin. And throughout the entire movie, whenever he is being presented, they play this theme, this violin for him. So it's like, that was his, like, you know, whenever Oppenheimer's on screen, I have to write these certain things for him so that we know that this is him going through whatever he's going through, because it's such a passionate instrument. And it's just so interesting to hear them talk. I mean, you bring up Ludwig Göransson, you think about The Mandalorian, and how Star Wars used to always have this one sound, and then he came out of nowhere with a sound for Mando, and everybody just went crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely something that like, it impacts movies, obviously, in an insane way. And like, people like me who don't pay as much attention, like, it's almost like a magic trick. Like, it's like, it's happening in the background, and I think of so many movies that were directed well, and put together well, that the music is just a part of that for me. And it's just like, that movie is just completely, it has a completely signature feeling than anything else I know. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
And it's often because of the music. And I'm the guy who's like, just not paying enough attention to even notice that that's what's doing it to me. Cause I think it's part of what's doing it to me, but it's like the music and everything else that they've decided to do on the screen.
One of the coolest ones that I, if you take Lord of the Rings, you start in the Shire and you have the Hobbit's theme, which is this adorable, you know, happy-go-lucky theme that plays whenever you see them throughout the first movie. Well, as the movie starts to move forward and as you start to get farther away from the Shire, they take that theme, they keep it throughout the movie, but they start to deconstruct it and take it apart and make it a little darker and change it, and only use, by the end when they're sitting there, you know, after the volcano's exploded, you hear the theme again, but it's been so stripped down, it's almost hopeless, but they hit the three or four main notes from it so that you get that feeling of home or longing and wanting to be, you know, happy. And it's just really interesting if you are tuned into those things to watch how it changes throughout the film and like kind of pay attention to it. It's just, it's cool. It's elevated movie watching.
I do love that about scores. And like, it's one of those things that like, it's not the thing I notice in movies. So I love watching breakdowns of that stuff because sometimes there really are like meaty things you can learn from like the things that the score does that are slightly different and slightly, they make different choices. And I love that. I love that exists. And it's just, I'm sorry. I feel like I am reiterating it, but like, yeah, it's not my thing. And like, I love that it is for you guys though. I really do.
Yeah.
KT Lisbeth, one of our patrons, says, oh my gosh, you guys, thanks for another great episode. I appreciated that you guys admitted that you, unlike Matt, are not professional musicians. However, that does not stop you from thoroughly enjoying and sharing your love of the MCU movie scores. Thanks for the reminder that you don't have to be an expert to share your opinion on some things or to love something. KT, that's our entire network. That's like our motto. We're not experts in anything. She continues. I also thought since this was a soundtrack episode, I would totally be okay listening to it at work. Well, at least my headphones were on and my supervisor was in a meeting so that she didn't see me laughing at my desk. Composer thirst is a thing now.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty great. Also, revisiting Thor thirst is always a great time. Rock on, pandas.
We're looking at you, Brian Tyler. You tall drink of blonde-eyed, blue-eyed water. My goodness. I know. And I had a couple people on Facebook, because I think I mentioned that Ken edited that one, being like, how does he do editing you when you're talking like a trash mouth on there? I'm like, he doesn't hear me. He hears wah, 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 wah.
You are just Charlie Brown's teacher to him. Yeah. That's good stuff. Oh man. Well, let's hit an X-Men 97 one. We got a few in the queue here. All right, let's see what we got. X-Men 97, Andre Sparks, one of our patrons, speaking about episode 5, says, which is the, I guess some people might be bouncing out because you're not watching X-Men 97, so spoiler alert, I guess, episode 5, this is the Genosha destruction that we witness. Andre Sparks says, hey guys, what else can I say but damn? To me, this episode was on par with Infinity War, Endgame, and No Way Home. Wow, Andre, those are big words. I felt very impacted by this episode. Them's some big words. I like it. It had everything you could ever want in an X-Men show. I just don't know how they can top this episode. Usually, this would be season finale type stuff, but no, it's just an episode with so much heart, pain, action, and drama. I don't know why the creator was let go, but they may need to get him back because the X-Men movie will now be compared to this masterpiece. The only way to make sure they are at least on the same level is to let him and any other writers for this episode cook. What do you guys think? Is there anything Feige can do to make sure the movie is successful and not cause the fans to revolt? I think we will always remember the name Gambit now and forever. Off to go listen to Remember the Name by Fort Minor and Forever by Drake. It's not a score, but I feel like these two songs speak to the work Gambit put in. Keep up the great work, Andre. Thanks, Andre.
Well, the reason this isn't the finale is because they're going to fix it.
Yeah, I don't like talking about it, but you're probably right.
I mean, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't introduce Cable. You wouldn't have him say, oh, no, not again. You know, this isn't the first time he's tried to stop this. I mean, maybe I'm wrong and I'll eat my words if I am. But
I think you're likely right. And I just don't want to know. Like, I wish I didn't know that. So like, I hate talking about it, but like, I know that's likely to happen, but they did it in such a way that like Andre's saying, how it impacts him and how this episode feels so epic to the point that like I feel like he's not totally off base when he compares it to those bigger movies, those big moments in movies. Like it really is a great moment in animation like history. But like I, which is one of the reasons it makes me mad that they will likely undo it, because it's so good. Like they did it so well that I don't want them to undo it. And that is crazy because I love Gambit and I want Gambit to be around forever. But like his death is so perfect in this moment and so tragic. And I will always think about the fact that like Rogue never got to tell him, you know what I mean? Like that is such good dramatic like stuff. And I want it. I want it to be the way it is because it's so good. It's like when you tell an amazing story and then just undo it. It always makes me mad. This kind of tragedy on screen is powerful, but it uses up the characters that you need. It uses up your characters. You can only kill the character. Well, if you don't undo
X-Men,
it,
you can kill them over and over again.
Yeah, sure, sure. But like, you can only do it the last time once. You know what I mean? Like, it's like if this was his real death, it's like a worthy death.
It would make more sense for film if this wasn't technically a kid's show. I would think maybe I would have been a little bit more like, wow, they're really going there. They're going to do this. But because it's kind of a children's show, I think it might not be as brutal. But I don't know. That's just how I see kids' stuff.
I see that. I mean, they've definitely brought back characters throughout the history of this show, even back in the day.
I still think Xavier is coming back, okay? They can keep messing around, but
Well, they never killed Xavier. They've just been saying he's dead, which is very strange.
Yeah, it's a very different tune from how it ended the last time. Like, everybody knew he went off, and this one, they're acting like he's dead. So they need to, you know, and in the comics somewhere, you know, spoiler 3, 2, 1, it was like Morph who died and it wasn't really Xavier. So I don't know if something like that, I don't know. There's so many different ways that they all die and then they all come back.
Yeah. And you know, Morph's still there. So probably it can't be that Morph, one. But yeah, it could be something else, I guess. I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't want them to undo it. I don't want the story to not have stakes.
I also, if they're going to do a film and they think they're going to do it without Magneto and Gambit, that would be kind of ridiculous. So we'll see how much of this will be a part of whatever movie that they're making. I wouldn't think that the two of them are going to be that intertwined, because I don't think you're going to start off the X-Men with no Xavier, no Magneto, and no Gambit
I do think these characters could appear like in a multiversal way, but I don't think I've never thought these would be our, I think we've played with the idea on the podcast, but I've never really bought into the idea that like this would be our version of the MCU characters. So I don't think that, but I do think it's possible these will like show up multiversally, in which case you could have anything happen to them in the cartoon. This cartoon could go really crazy places, you know?
Right.
But just the fact that Cable's there, it's just sort of like this get out of jail free card, and I don't love that. If they bring them back, there has to be another major loss, and it's got to be it needs to be a trade off. You can't just have like the undo button pressed. That's annoying. It has to be some sort of like trade off gamble where it's like, well, we could go do this. We could fix it. Cable shows up and to Rogue 20 years later and says, we could go fix this, but it's going to have a cost, and like they have to go do it, you know?
Yeah. They can take Madeline. Bye, Madeline.
Yeah. I know you said on the podcast last week, you didn't want it to be Rogue, but like the way this is set up feels like it's gotta be Rogue. Yeah. If they're going to do some sort of trade, you know, if they're going to trade lives, as the Avengers would not say. Okay. But before we move on, we need to talk to you guys about Hims. Hims is an online source for erectile dysfunction treatment. Your sex life is very important, and there's no shame around this. But if you're feeling that and you don't want to go to in-person doctor's visits, you can get your ED treatments through Hims. Hims is changing men's health by providing access to affordable, sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable, hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. So they have options available for whatever your needs are. You can get the brand name stuff or the generics. And the process is simply and 100% online. No uncomfortable in-person doctor's visits. Answer a series of questions on their site. A medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you for free. No insurance needed. If ED is getting you down, it's time to join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated.
Start your free online visit today at hims.com/MCU. That's hims.com/MCU for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/MCU. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and, more importantly, safety information. Subscription required. Prices vary based on product and subscription plans.
Yeah. So check it out. hims.com/MCU. Getting back to all this X-Men 97 goodness, we got some more feedback here. KT Elizabeth, back with us, one of our patrons.
Doubles.
Yeah, doubled up. She says about the scores and the X-Men. I know you guys are going to talk about all the deep stuff is happening this episode, but oh my gosh, I bet Ashley loved some of the shots of her man snack.
Man snack neato.
M is for man snack, as she said in a previous episode. And then she quotes Ash in the episode, in the savage lands, getting sexy.
She's like, paint me like one of your French girls, Maggie's.
Did you just call him Maggie?
Yeah.
Like,
I could see her having like a cute little nickname for him.
Oh, for sure. I think that the gender bent use of Maggie though is very cute. It's very cute. I like it.
That's 2024.
Oh yeah. You can be named anything you want to be.
No, I don't know how she, you know, that'd be a really hard one. I get like following your heart, but getting asked to be Magneto's like queen on this thing and they're doing their little dance and I was really into it.
I know, right?
You know, if the love is not there, it's not there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough decision for Rogue for sure. And it's also just like, in general, the life she could have and the fact that she can touch him is such an important thing to her in that moment.
He laid it on real thick, too, when he's like, I get why Gambit and goes through it. And, you know, you don't have to love us back, but we're happy just being in your orbit or whatever. I was like, damn, you were laying that on thick to her.
He did. And he won her over for a moment, but then they had their chance to touch and dance and she was not feeling it. Toya Johnson, says, hello, Jam. When the original X-Men cartoon came out, I was in college, but it began my love of the X-Men. I love that the spirit and heart of the original show is layered all through these episodes. As a black woman, episode 2 got me in the heart. When Jean was talking to Storm about the possibility of her child being a mutant, I thought, how many black parents have had to tell their child that they're different or that the world would look at them differently? That is a discussion that most parents of minorities face that is hard but honest, not because anything the child had done, but how they look. The second thing was that Jean, a standard-looking white woman, was telling Storm about being different. Storm is a blue-eyed, white-haired black woman. I think she knows what it feels like to be different. No one has to explain that feeling to Storm. It was very white-splaining, but now others can see and hear what the concern and fear looks and sounds like. Thirdly, when Magneto said, what must we do to prove that we are good enough? I almost burst into tears. During my freshman English class in college, a guy said, you three black students are only here because you're colored. Oof.
What an asshole.
I couldn't be smart. I couldn't have gotten in on my own merits. I couldn't be good enough. I could only be black, and that was the only reason I earned a spot. On one hand, the minorities are told to go to school to and pick ourselves up. On the other hand, we aren't smart enough to get into school on our own. Almost 30 years later, and I can recall that memory like it happened yesterday.
I'm so sorry. That's messed up. I hate people.
Really, really messed up. I'm really sorry, Toya. I love that this show can be entertaining, but also can hold up a mirror to society to show ugliness and the hard stuff. I pray that the show can open up some minds to show the other side of the coin of life to bring some understanding. Sorry for the long email, but the show can be a lot, and there's so much to go through and feel. Keep up the good work and keep on jamming, Toya Johnson.
I think that's the coolest thing about X-Men is they've always done it. And mm-hmm. I didn't notice it as much until I rewatched it as an adult. But they sure have never hidden it or sugarcoated, you know, M for mutant minorities. It could be anything. And they really are trying to, like, he's always been trying to drive home this, you know, everybody, you know, should be included or whatever, you know, the right mm-hmm. thing to say. But yeah, X-Men has always specifically been that soapbox, you know, kind of show. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just think, I hope people go back and rewatch it and just remember, like, you know, when people are like, ooh, X-Men are so woke or this is that, like, well, it's always been like that. Yeah,
that's what it's about, is about,
yeah,
like, the fear of minorities. Like, that's what the show, like, that's what the Sentinels are. Or anybody different. You know? Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's what I mean by minority. Like, it doesn't yeah. have to be a racial minority. And as the show, as the X-Men have moved through society, it has progressed to a lot more, like, queer representational and stuff. And that's the beauty of any allegory, any, like, science fiction allegory, is that you can tell these kinds of stories in a way that might break through the normal, like, the walls that people put up. Because, like, yeah. I definitely understand where Toya is coming from with when she says that Jean is white-splaining to Storm about
she's
feeling different.
She's not wrong about that
She's
scene.
Not wrong. She's 100% right. But at the same time, there are people in the world that won't listen to that message from Storm, but they'll see her Jean go, oh, look what it's like to be different. And it's like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, the allegory of it all is to allow someone who can connect to different kinds of characters, see themselves in a character, and then go, oh, maybe I'm the one, you know what I mean? Like, this.
Yeah.
So I completely understand the problematic nature of it, but I also see that's one thing that X-Men doesn't do very well. Like, in that moment, Storm could have absolutely said, like, you don't think I know what it's like to be different, you
know? Well, thinking back on it, she packed her shit and left right after that. She's like, I'm so done with this.
That's true. That's a good point.
I'm not going to sit here and be the little therapist for everybody. That's not going to be my new job.
Yeah, for sure.
Storm would agree with me. Is that what you think, honey?
Oh, man. I love these shows that they can bring up these issues and, like, just make you root for the people that you need to be rooting for and then hit those messages home. Because, like, she's totally right. Tons of that messaging is going on in these episodes. But then, like, you can also watch it and just think, oh man, Gambit's a badass. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you can have these two things. It can be so entertaining and also so, like, in your face with the message. And I love it. I do really love it. So thank you, Toya, for the thoughtful response. And I'm really sorry for some of the stuff you've gone through. And just in general, like, it's just, the world is moving, hopefully moving in a better direction. Although it doesn't seem like it all the time. Yeah.
I was just thinking about where Arizona just did, and I'm just like,
right.
Yeah,
we're exactly. not moving. Exactly. Yeah. And I'm sitting at exactly, that's like my thinking was going to Magneto. I'm like, you know, it's a maybe there is hope. And then I thought of Genosha, and I'm like, oh, right. Maybe there's not.
Yeah. And that's not the answer either. You shouldn't have to go live on your own planet. It's
100%, 100%. Like, the idea in that episode is Genosha's being introduced into the UN, which, like, is the idea of bringing them back into the fold, not, like, excluding them. But then what happens. And it really makes me fascinated to see what these last few episodes are about. I mentioned earlier in the season how they tended to give some of these like characters that are part of the Friends of Humanity or whatever, they gave mm-hmm. them some lines that sort of like made Cyclops struggle with the idea of living up to Charles's example. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then with Cyclops standing up and saying like, no, we're not like you, we're better. Like, it seems like he's being pushed in a direction where he's like forgetting about Charles's ideals, which like, it's weird because Magneto has come around and yeah. he's trying, and then Cyclops is being pushed further and further away. And I'm really interested to see what the show is going to say in the end.
Yeah. We need Storm back. We need a leader, because it's not going to yeah. be Scott right now, because Scott has no idea what's going on with himself.
100%. Yeah. Scott is in a dark place, and like, he's in a dark place, but also like,
a lot of trauma.
Yeah. Like and after this, after what we just seen with Genosha, like Scott is going to be, yeah. How many?
All of them.
It's going to be interesting to see how they handle that and how they walk that line, because it doesn't feel yeah. like there's a line to walk. Like this Genosha incident just feels like it blew up the entire idea of peace. And it yeah. feels like it would push every mutant to be more like Magneto was, you know?
Well, we need to see who did it, though, because I'm very interested to see who was controlling that big sentinel, because mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And as we discussed in the episode, like, then we go back to the Cable thing. I keep being like, are they all dead, or were they teleported possibly? Like, there's like that little bit of thing. They're dead for now. And then I'm thinking like, well, it doesn't have to even be teleported, because I can just undo the whole thing with Cable. Yeah, I don't know.
And Bishop.
And then it's like, it just undermines the whole thing. Like, who did this? Why did they do it? Like, I'm more interested in going forward knowing the atrocity happened and them reconciling with it than like undoing it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
just,
yeah.
Just, I'm going to sound like Matthew Fox here, but like, this is one of the big weaknesses of time travel. You know, like the idea that you can just undo anything. I love a time travel story, but like,
Endgame. I was just like, okay.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. In what Endgame did, which was beautiful, is they didn't undo it.
They took two. They brought everybody else back, and then they took two important ones. Well, but
they kept the 5 years. Like, that's the important part. All these people still went through the things they went through, but they were able to undo the snap, but they didn't undo it with time travel like we thought they were going to do. Well, they did undo it with time travel, but not the same way we thought they were going to do it. They didn't, like, stop the snap from ever happening, which was... That's all we talked about leading up to it. We were like, oh, they're definitely going to undo it with time travel. And then, technically, they did. But, like, not the way I was thinking.
Which is good.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that's what they do with this. I want to be wrong, but the only thing that's keeping me together is being like, I know my X-Men stuff, and they don't do that. They don't not fix this stuff. But hey, if they're wrong, I'm gonna be shocked. Shook.
Yeah.
Slayed.
Yeah. Slay. Okay. Brayson Wong wrote in saying, hey, Jam, writing in because I don't have anyone else to talk to about this show, but I gotta say, I'm glad I watched the original series before starting this. Each character means so much to me now. It feels like the stakes are way higher this time around, and I think every episode has made me weep so far. So excited to see where the rest of this series goes, and looking forward to hearing what y'all think about this episode. Cheers, Brayson.
That's what we're here for, Brayson. Come talk to us about it.
That's why we're here. I definitely got weepy during the last episode.
That one, I felt more when I watched it again.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm so hard to make me. If there's not an animal involved, I'm a monster. I don't get upset.
You don't get too emotional without an animal involved. It's funny.
It's so weird.
No, it's great. Anyway, yeah, I'm... thanks for writing in. I think this show has meant more to me than I expected it to. Like I was in for covering it. I liked the original series and I was like, yeah, let's do it. And then it's hit me in the feels and like kept me wrapped with my attention like way more than I expected it to.
Yeah. And I think he's right. I mean, even if people have just started it, I've seen some people asking questions in the Facebook chat. Should I go back and watch the original? Yes. Yes, you absolutely should. It doesn't take that long. The episodes are short. It gets a little hinged at the last season, but I'm telling you, go back and watch it because you will have such a better understanding. And then because people are like, oh, I don't know, I didn't watch the original series, but was it this hard and heavy? Yeah, it was. It was a little bit more unhinged. This feels more, I guess, more modern and more put together, I would say, than what they were doing in 94, 97 or whatever, like the original one. But yeah, it's all still there. Like Wolverine goes through the one with Nightcrawler. They, you know, he like finds God. Like it's heavy stuff. It's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. It really is. Well, before we move on to a few more feedbacks, we're going to talk about Beam's Dream Powder.
Beam's the best.
You've heard us talk about Beam before. We love Beam's Dream Powder. It helps you sleep. It's good stuff. It's the healthy hot cocoa for sleep. Science-backed, in fact, healthy hot cocoa for sleep.
Yeah, if you're having trouble sleeping or staying asleep like I do, like I can fall asleep at 9:30. If anybody who's friends with me knows, if you text me after 9 o'clock, you're going to get a random text back or message at 1, 2, 3 a.m. because I don't stay asleep. And it's so important to be able to find a product that not only is delicious, it's not a pill, and it actually works.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, it's not a pill. It's a really nice sleep aid that you sit and sip on. It's healthy hot cocoa. Other sleep aids can cause next day grogginess, but Dream contains a powerful all-natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, melatonin, and nano-CBD to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. And today, our listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder, their science-backed healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. Better sleep has never tasted better. The numbers don't lie. In a clinical study, 93% of participants reported Dream helped them get better sleep.
If you want to try Beam's best-selling Dream Powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/MCUpod and use code MCUpod at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/MCUpod and use code MCUpod for up to 40% off.
Yeah.
Delicious chocolate, peanut butter, cinnamon, sea salt, caramel. Go get some. Get some sleep. Feel better.
Go get you some tasty, tasty sleep. All right. Yeah, let's last few of these feedbacks before we head out. We got a few that are just like random things that aren't any nothing to do with X-Men. Let's see what these guys are talking about. Christian Sell says, "Hey guys, I discovered your podcast last year at the perfect time, but honestly, I wish I would have found it a long time ago. I love the MCU and Marvel so much, so it's such a joy to listen to it and just get to geek out over all the great content. The other day, though, I realized that there was something I had to share with you guys, and I hope you'll think it's as awesome as I do. I work in an auto salvage company that disassembles cars, and sometimes we will actually get cars from Marvel movies. For example, we actually got all the cars they used in Captain America, the Winter Soldier, as well as the car used in Black Panther from the one chase scene. It's one of the coolest aspects of my job that every once in a while, one will show up. I even sent out an email to the person in charge of them and told them to just send me them all to our plant. I'll be the official Marvel movie program car guy of our company. Still waiting to hear back, LOL. Anyway, sorry for the long-winded email, but I'll send you guys pictures of them and definitely if any more show up. I hope you guys think it is as cool as well. Love the podcast. Your loyal fan, Christian."
He did send the pictures. I saw them. They were pretty cool.
Cool. Very cool. So is it like cars we would know from the movies, or is it like beat up cars?
Oh, they're beat up, but
like the ones they've exploded and the ones that's really, really cool. It's really, really cool. Thanks, Christian, for writing in. And yeah, we love to see them. Anything you get, like it'd be fun to like try to go through and identify the cars based on the pictures, you know?
That'd be funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm sure they come in to be destroyed like before. Like what if we were like, okay, I see a scratch mark on that one. That's definitely a Wolverine claw. You know what I mean? Like before movies come out, we're like analyzing destroyed cars.
I'd like to see Nick Fury's SUV from Winter Soldier, since he said he got all the cars from those. That one was jacked up.
Yeah, it was. Big hole in the bottom of the... I'm sure they were different. They probably used different cars too for different moments. I love the fact that we get these emails sometimes, people that like are working on the edges of the MCU, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we've got people who've like been in a movie here or there. We've had people that like work on props for the movies, like just like writing in cool little tidbits, and I think it's so, so cool.
Very cool.
Pamela Davies says, hi, Pam from Liverpool in the UK. Been listening to your cast for a while, but never wrote in. First time, long time, I guess. Mm. I've been rewatching the Defenders series. Yes, a lot, I know. In anticipation for Daredevil Born Again, and thought of a connection with Shang-Chi and the Iron Fist. Yes, even watching the Iron Fist again. Please don't judge.
There's no judging.
No judging at all. Could Kunlun be the same dimension as Ta-Lo? Both have secret patches to get to, crazy martial arts, and dragons that give magical powers. Just a thought I wanted to share. Another random thing that stayed in my brain is that the Darkhold isn't destroyed as Strange read it, who has a photographic memory and can't believe no one has said this before.
Oh, honey, we've said that a lot.
Love you 3000, Pam. I hadn't heard that one.
Because he has a photographic memory. Oh, yeah. We were talking about Mom, that technically, if they want to bring it up like that, he's seen it.
Like, you're right. If he's seen it, he could just like, he's seen it on the walls at the Cullen, he's, or mm-hmm. not, at a, what's that? Vundagore.
Wonder Bear?
Wondercore. That's the one. I don't know if they're the same dimension.
I would assume probably.
But it seems like it could be. It could be like a similar dimension, like different cities within that dimension. Except the Ta-Lo is supposed to be like a place between the, like it says in the movie something like they're a place between them and the afterworld or something like that. Remember that?
Kind of.
Yeah, they're like a protection, but maybe similar to Ta-Lo, maybe similar to Kunlun. I don't know. It's possible. If they wanted to, they could tie those together and just say they're different places on an alternate Earth or whatever.
Yeah, sure. Dragons.
Dragons.
Down with the dragons.
Down with the dragons. But yeah, thank you, Pam, for it. And I do think that's a really good idea for the bringing back the Darkhold. Like, Stephen Strange goes dark enough and he just decides to rewrite the Darkhold, and then you've got a Darkhold written by Stephen Strange. Like, that'd be cool. Be really cool.
Plus all the Darkhold diaries coming out, or if that's even still what it's called, and I feel like all those witches are going to be able to reconjure that book.
yeah, very possible. Or that they've got multiple copies or something. Like, if the Darkhold diaries is following the Darkhold, like it clearly will have to go into the future. Like, where is it? What happened to it?
Yeah.
But according to, she supposedly destroyed all copies of the known multiverse. Up next, we got Kai Weichman says, hey, MCU cast, I started listening right before What If Season 2 came out, and want you to know whoever is on today or ever on the pod should know you are amazing. Thank you so much, Kai. So to keep this sort of short, I had a crazy theory. So a supposed What If Season 3 episode list has an episode titled What If Khonshu Chose Peter Parker? Oh, that would be cool.
That's going to be cool.
It's a supposed list. So these go around every season before a season's released, and like, they're always, sometimes they're right and sometimes they're just totally wrong. So who knows if that's right. But, so I thought, what if we got an Arachnite.
I get what he's saying.
Is like a hybrid of Spider-Man and Moon Knight. Oh, Arachnite. I get
like
it.
Arachnite, like a yeah.
Yeah, no, I got the Arach part, and I was like the Knight part. Moon Knight. Arachnite. I get it. Who is a hybrid of Spider-Man and Moon Knight? I think so. Then I thought, what if in Secret Wars there was a Moon Knight assassin guild thingy?
Okay.
I guess the Thor Corps, like the Moon Knight Corps. Then after that, I thought, what if we got a Disney Plus series that explored the battle world after Kang Dynasty ruined the multiverse, and we could see who rules, whether it be Doom or Doctor Strange, on my personal theory, Mephisto, the series could maybe end with someone opening the life raft, revealing the couple heroes who were saved. I literally was going to going crazy with this theory and would love to see who you build on it for all time, always, Kai. Okay, so the theory is just that they would do a Disney Plus series.
About Battleworld?
About Battleworld, which, I mean, like, Battleworld feels pretty extensive. Like, if they were to somehow... The problem is the connection between movies and TVs is always tenuous. So if you really wanted a Battle World series, you'd have to have whoever is making Secret Wars be really involved with the making of a Battle World series so that they all like go together and don't conflict and like they work really well together. But that does feel, I mean, like you could have, I guess, after the fact, you could write like stories about characters that were in Secret Wars, like mm-hmm. some of the smaller characters, you could have little spinoffs, like almost like they have the spinoff comics when those series are happening, when those bigger events are happening. So it could work. I like the idea, like grabbing a character and like how about this? Like we see all of Secret Wars, we see them somehow grab a life raft. I don't know if that's something from comics or like whatever is going to bring the characters who survive through to the new world, the new universe that's being created, right? But we don't know the actual like fate of every character, right? So then we have a series of like almost anthology show where you see like one character's trip through Battle World, like what happened to them, and you could have them all like kind of like we talked about how Eternals should have done, where they do like 10 episodes and they give us each of the Eternals story, and you have little moments where they intersect and moments where they fall apart, like, but you could tell the story of like what happened to Darcy in Battle World, you know what I mean? Like characters that are like not necessarily the Avengers, because we might see where all them end up at the end of a Secret Wars movie, but all the other little characters, like you could see Darcy just like running around Battle World dodging like all the different whatever groups, you know, like he's talking about
holy shit
like a Moon Knight core and a Thor core and a this and like all these different groups and factionalism within the Secret Wars Battle World thing. That could be really fun. I like that idea.
I'm not one to say that, but that would probably work better as an animated show.
you are right. It would probably allow them to do more.
Yeah.
And like, let's start writing it, because I mean, we've got a few years.
Yeah, TM.
TM. But I mean, honestly, though, it would kind of be a perfect place to put it in a What If series. Because What If has been like, you've built up What If as the multiverse show. So like, what if season 8 or whatever is happening after Secret Wars, and they do that. They could show us what happened to actual characters from the MCU, but they could also show us what happened to the characters we care about from What If, you know, that have been on multiple seasons of the show, like what happened to Captain Carter during Battle World, you know?
Yeah. She's doing fine.
I think she made it. Yeah, man. I like that. I like the idea, Kai. Could be really, really fun. And I don't know if that What If Khonshu is chose Peter Parker as real, but that would be really fun. What if?
Yeah, that'd be a fun one.
It'd just be nice for them to acknowledge Moon Knight, if I'm being honest. Like, Moon Knight's so good, and it feels like they have kind of just like we talked about Shang-Chi being left on the table so long, Moon Knight having no connection yet feels bad.
I wonder if choosing Oscar Isaacs, who was perfect for the character, but he's also an extremely busy actor. Like, he's doing the new Guillermo del Toro Frankenstein, and there's a lot of other things. I could see him choosing the films over.
Sure.
Which, I mean, I would do that too as an actor, because I mean, money.
Yeah.
But other, you know, other experiences. But I don't know. You wouldn't pick him just to do one season of one show with him if you're not going to have him be something moving forward. So I do think he'll come back.
Yeah. And I think they definitely have a plan for him. But the way they ended the show made it feel like the show was going to continue. Like the cliffhanger. Yeah. Like if it had just been like the end, Moon Knight exists and that's who the character is, he could show up in a movie, but like leaving it with that mystery of the character, like you kind of need the character to not have to have too much work done in the next appearance, you know? Like, so having Jake Lockley like be a third alter that they've got to worry about would be weird in a movie. But on a second season of the show, it seems perfect. So
unless they do like a Midnight Suns and they don't make it too big of a movie and they just have it be like, that's a big part of what's going on and make the show kind of the movie around him a little bit more.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just hope that we have gotten very few sequel series since Disney Plus started. You know, WandaVision was 2021. Like, it's going to be almost 2025 before we, like, it's going to be middle of 2024 before we get a season two with Agatha. You know, like, it's not even a season two, it's just a spinoff of that. And so I think it is likely that Moon Knight hasn't appeared yet because they just are on this sort of schedule. Like, they're planning another Moon Knight, but they're just, I don't know why they did it this way, but they're planning to do, like, much more space between shows. Mm-hmm. Partially because of the big stars, like you mentioned, Oscar Isaac, and like,
yeah, what are you gonna do?
You know, all the characters who were in WandaVision too. Like, you can't just snap and bring them back. They're all big movie stars, so it takes 3 years to work out all 3 to 4 years to get work out all the logistics to get another season out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, well, my friends, thank you so much for joining us. I think that's gonna wrap us for our news and feedback episode. We tried to give you a little bit of an extra long one because we had a few extra ads than normal, so we try to like not pack those together too closely. So we hope
business daddy is in control. So
yeah, we do.
Thanks for just going with the flow, everybody.
Yeah. So when we have extra ads, we try to provide the content commensurate with the number of ads. So a little extra long episode for you guys this week. Thank you. We'll be back soon. Anything you want to tell people about, Ash?
I guess on Bill and Ash's Terror Theater, we are gonna this week drop Ready or Not and preparation for next week's new movie Abigail, Vampire Ballerina. So if you're into that, join us for that. We'll probably drop that a week after that movie comes out so that everybody has time to go see it if you're into it. So yeah, Haley Hobbs will be joining us for both of those. So jump over as I slowly bring her into the horror side.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's working.
That's great. That's wonderful. We are covering, speaking of not horror, but some pretty horrific stuff, we're covering Fallout on Pandavision. So if you are watching Fallout on Amazon Prime, over on Pandavision, which is another one of our podcasts here on the network, go to search it to find it anywhere you get podcasts. Me, Jay Sisson, and Jay Scotty, all people over from Multiverse News, are all covering that. So if you dig that kind of stuff, Fallout's been really cool and weird and fun.
I'm just happy Kyle MacLachlan's in it. I'm not going to snap my butt. Like, I don't need another dystopian end of world video game TV show. I'm pretty tapped out. But Kyle MacLachlan, get all the work. He's my favorite.
I will say, it is another video game end of the world TV show, but it is such a different vibe than anything else. Like, it's such a different vibe. And yeah, Kyle MacLachlan, it was cool to see him pop up.
Love him.
So yeah, check it out. Pandavision, wherever you get podcasts. We'll be back soon with more Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. Peace.
Until next time, true believers.
Hey, you just listened to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast from Stranded Panda. I really hope you liked it. Let me just say a big thank you to all of our supporters on patreon.com/MCUcast. You are the lifeblood of our little operation here, and a huge thank you to our insanely generous Illuminati tier patrons, Walter Kreisky III, Lieutenant Bongo, and Jazz Viz. You guys are amazing. If you'd like to see our beautiful faces, you can catch a video version of many of our episodes at youtube.com/strandedpanda. Love you 3,000, my friends.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.